Welcome to the Borderless Podcast, your guide to traveling, investing, and living beyond borders, where we talk about living the life that you want to live, where you want to live it.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another Borderless Podcast. This is James Guzman, and I will tell you, I am not feeling great right now. I have a little bit of a cough, and it's also late. I've been working all day, but you know, I'm here. I got to finish this podcast off, so I'm here for you guys, and wanted to intro this great interview that I had, this next podcast. I think you guys are really going to enjoy it, and we have a special offer for you from the guest. And before that, you know, I wanted to talk a little bit about Medellin. I've been here for 3 weeks now, a little bit over 3 weeks, and so I sent out an email to the email list, and if you're on the email list, you'd know that, and if you're not, go to borderlessblog.com and sign up. Go do it, and that way you'll get all types of updates and stuff like that. And you know, I was talking about the you know, the differences between San Miguel and Medellin, because you know, I was coming directly from San Miguel de Allende in Mexico, where I've been for a few years, and so I could directly see the differences between the two Latin American cities. Now, you know, one thing a lot of people always think about is the cost of living. The cost of living, I would say, is very similar to San Miguel and Medellin are pretty similar, although, you know, this is a big city, so normally big cities are more expensive. You can get rent here, I've found to be very cheap in Medellin. I mean, comparatively to other cities, you can get some really great apartments, and they have a lot of high rises and stuff, so you can get places with great views for inexpensive prices. But other than that, like food and eating out is similar. Although the food here in Medellin, I will say, is not as good as San Miguel. San Miguel has great food, Mexico in general. I think a lot of people know that. And San Miguel specifically has a lot of fresh ingredients and local farms, and they're really into organic stuff. So it brings about a lot of different good restaurants and food and stuff. So that is one of the differences. And another one is just the business environment. I found that here in Medellin, if you're looking at, you know, if you're younger and you want to start a business here, Colombia or Medellin is going to be better for you. They're business friendly here. They're foreign friendly here. They're okay with foreigners coming and starting up a business and stuff. And I don't see that too as much of an extent as I see here. One downside is the pollution. It's a growing city. Medellin is growing quickly, and it's a driving city, so that means there's more cars, and that's just going to be more pollution, and they're definitely seeing that, so hopefully they get a hold on that, but that's something that's happening. Also, just crazy traffic in general. A lot of traffic in the morning and stuff like that, and just the way people drive is crazy, and you have to basically run across the road here, or they will run you over. It's pretty interesting, but you don't get so much of that in Mexico. One thing I really like here is that people are really into exercise and, you know, going to the gym and fitness and eating right and stuff. And they even have a lot of the roads here in the city shut down on Sundays, and they have people that go cycling and running, and everybody's out with their dogs and stuff, and it's pretty cool. I mean, I really enjoy that. So I went to a gym on top of a mountain the other day. That was something else. You had to walk 30, 45 minutes way up, and then they have a outdoor gym with food and smoothies and people hanging out, and lots of good-looking people there, which brings me to my next point. The women are beautiful here. I know it's a stereotype, but it's true. And you see them all over the place. They really take care of themselves and, you know, dress well, and they take advantage of that inexpensive plastic surgery. So you do see a lot of that down here. Weather's great here. So is the weather in San Miguel. One difference is that I would say that it's more of kind of the party Latino culture here than Mexico in general. So, you know, you get, I don't know. It's hard to explain, but I think that people get the idea. And so that's, you know, I've really been enjoying it here. I've come down, and as many people know, I'm working with, as you all should know, I'm working with Vincenzo Villamena at Online Tax Man, and he was on the podcast a few episodes ago. So if you need any help with taxes or setting up companies or offshore structures or stuff like that, let me know. We can get you a consultation. And I have no reviews, so review the show, and I will read it on the podcast, and remember to sign up on the mailing list. So without further ado, we're going to go to Ian Bond, and he has been a fan of the show for a while and been following it. He's really given some great insight to me and help with growing the audience and stuff like that, and we've had a lot of great discussions, and he's finally getting his program off the road, and so I really want to help him do this, and so I hope that you guys will take advantage of the special offer that we have today, which is $1 for free for a month for his program that he's launched. And I think that you can afford $1 for the month. And he's really trying to help people that are stuck in this new economy, people that thought they were retiring. Maybe they are having trouble doing that. And so we're going to talk all about that. And you'll get to meet Ian Bond. So I hope you enjoy it. And thanks for listening. Borderless. All right, everybody. Welcome to another Borderless podcast. This is your host, James Guzman. I'm here in Medellin, Colombia, right now at the Global Express co-working space where I've been hanging out here. And today I have on Ian Bond, and it's great to have him on. He's been a listener of the podcast. We've known each other for a while. He's doing a lot of interesting stuff, and I've mentioned him a few times, well, a number of times on the podcast. I think his message is very relevant to a lot of people that listen to the Borderless podcast, and so I'm very happy to have him on. So welcome, Ian Bond.
Thanks, James. It's really a pleasure to finally be able to participate and hook up with you. We talk a lot of times, you know, one-on-one. It's, right. It's fun to actually get it on a recording, I guess.
Yeah. Well, you've been making the rounds because, you know, you've launched your website, and you've got your information product, the No Nest Egg retirement plan, and you've got the website I've mentioned, my retirementrehab.me. And so, you know, if you don't mind, maybe we can go back and talk about, you know, what it is exactly. How do you got to be where you are? What's your message about how the economy has changed and how people can now survive in today's world?
Yeah. Sure. I'll just maybe give some people a little bit deeper background. So I'm 60 years old, and at the end of 2012, when I got my corporate bonus, I realized that the world had changed. My bonus in 2011 had been down 50%, even though my business had been up. My bonus in 2012, even though my business was up again, was flat. So I was making about 40% of what I was making before the financial crisis. And then end of 2012, I was 55. And, you know, that didn't mesh well with you know, what I needed to fund my retirement. I have a kid in college, and I have two younger kids. And when you're 55, you don't have that many years left, particularly with ageism and everything that was going on. So it hit me like a ton of bricks. There was an emotional component. There was a financial component, and, you know, full disclosure, I was earning a lot of money and spending a lot of money. So, you know, no one's going to cry crocodile tears for me. But, you know, when you go through that process, you have to figure out, you know, how you're going to fund your family's future. And so what I did was I left my job on Wall Street. And I was recruited to move overseas. And when I was moved overseas and took a job overseas, one of the things that was part of the program was that I relocated in September. My family didn't join me till the following summer. We kept the kids in school just to make sure that things continued, you know, were okay in the job. And I immersed myself into all things e-commerce. And I enrolled in a bunch of courses, and I read a bunch of books, and I networked with a whole bunch of people. And I had kind of already come to the conclusion that the new economy, which I was seeing, you know, just disrupt industries, was the place where, you know, my future was going to be. And so I focused on that. And ultimately, you know, was able to right-size my my lifestyle, actually before I moved here, right-size my lifestyle, and went through the emotional part of kind of, you know, living off of Park Avenue, but, you know, not in one of the big apartments, yeah. One of the little ones. And, you know, had the conversation with my wife, which was, you know, a very difficult thing. She was fine. It was me that was, you know, kind of a mess when I had to come to this realization. But we went through all of the kind of the financial planning piece. And so ultimately, when we got involved in e-commerce, you know, kind of the thought crossed me that there are other people going through this. And so, given my background of over 36 years in on Wall Street and running wealth management and asset management businesses, I put together a program called the No Nest Egg Retirement Plan, and it's for people that are in their 40s or 50s or 60s, and they don't have a nest egg, or they don't have a big enough pile of money that they're going to live off of. We're all going to live too long. You know, that's a bad thing now. You know, we're going to live too long, and we need cash flow. And so the reality is that there are just an enormous number of ways that you can actually turn what looks like a negative into a huge positive and create a phenomenal lifestyle. And right. So in the No Nest Egg Retirement Plan, I go through some of the building blocks that, you know, kind of uniquely I know because I, you know, have been in this industry for 36 years. And then I talk about some of the things that most people wouldn't know because I kind of immersed myself in this whole world, back when I moved over here in 2014.
Yeah. And I think that is probably the majority of people, at least in the United States, in that, you know, age range are in that situation. You know, if they even did plan for it, which a lot of them didn't even plan very well. They just figured, oh, you know, Social Security, or I'll have a pension, or I don't know, something would work out, and it really hasn't. Or maybe they lost money in the, you know, crashes or something like that. Yeah. But even if they have planned, they haven't had as much as they thought they would. And with, you know, the kind of the investment environment that we're in now, it's hard to get return and all this. So, it's just all kinds of or the whole ton of people that need that kind of assistance. And you've looked at this, you know, I went through your No Nest Egg Plan, and you've really gone through, you know, the details of how you see what's going on, and also some solutions. What do you think, like, how do you see it? What are all the things that have added up to this situation that we're in today? Like, what are all the aspects that have gotten people where they're just, you know, not at the situation?
Yeah. Just to frame the situation which you allude to, something like less than 10% of people who should be prepared to retire, you know, are prepared to retire. It's a massive problem.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's not getting any better.
Right.
It's not with ageism in the workplace and you know, disruptive technologies taking changing the nature of work and careers and professions, you know, it's not getting any easier for people. You know this well in some of the things that you do. So you have people who think that they would like to work to age 70, but are going to be disappointed that whatever they're trained for isn't going to, you know, be able to pay them at the level that they think that they need to earn at until age 70. So I think they're literally people that'll never be able to retire, unfortunately. And, you know, the surveys that are taken by lots of people and organizations, you know, kind of everybody needs $1,000 or $2,000 or more on top of, whatever retirement funds that they have, plus Social Security. And, you know, there are no more corporate pensions, so you can kiss those goodbye. So, you know, that's the problem. The solution to it is to embrace it and figure out a way to take advantage of it, just like we're doing today. Okay, so you're in Medellin, Colombia, which costs a fraction of what it would cost to be in, you know, kind of Dallas or where you were for a while, or New York, where I was for a long time, you know, take advantage of location, take advantage of technology, and take advantage of your skill set and utilize that, which most people aren't doing, as opposed to, you know, kind of retraining yourself to go back into the same shrinking pool of you know, opportunity, which I think is like a crazy strategy, to be honest.
Right.
So.
Yeah, and you know, I In Mexico, especially, more than here in Colombia. But here in Colombia, you do too. You see a lot of people that are, you know, retired, but they retire just on Social Security. And, you know, but they're able to live on Social Security alone in a place, you know, in Mexico or something like that. But, I mean, you know, in reality, even when it was set out, you know, Social Security, wasn't it? It was part of the three-legged stool, right? Because you had, you know, it wasn't meant to be all-encompassing. And even that, like, you know, I think that we've known for decades now, it's turned into kind of a joke that, you know, the numbers on Social Security don't work. You know, it's just like ongoing. You know what I mean? Like for my generation, it's kind of a joke. Like, you know, you know, a lot of people I would say my age don't expect to receive Social Security, at least in the same way that it's given now. Right.
I would say this. You know, I'm only a couple of years away from being eligible for Social Security, and so I think I have got a high likelihood that I might get a check. It'll all depend on how upset your generation gets,
right?
You know, and what your generation, you know, is going to say on funding this going forward. The demographics are such that the baby boomers are so huge compared to the millennials, okay, that it's kind of hard to do that. And then, you know, Washington has, and I'm not a political person, but, you know, we all know politicians really have no spine to take on a hard problem, right? So the easiest thing to do is to keep it going and kind of kick the can down the road. But, you know, the three-legged stool was, you know, your savings. It was your corporate pension, and then there was some small amount that was going to come from the government. Well, the first two people are zeroed out on, you know, and, you know, I'm a big Robert Kiyosaki fan, okay? And, you know, if you go back in time and look at when he wrote and launched Rich Dad, Poor Dad, which was in the late 90s, it was right after a book came out called The Millionaire Next Door. And Millionaire Next Door was all about the fact that you could have been a normal Joe, lived modestly, and your home and your IRA made you a millionaire. Well, you know what? The dot-com crisis and the great financial crisis and what's going on in technology has changed all that. So, you know, like, I don't really have to you know, the funny thing is I don't really have to, you know, explain this in, you know, too graphic detail to most people. Most people get the joke. The bulk of the people that subscribe to MyRetirementRehab.me are in their 40s. So, you know, that's kind of the encouraging thing. People are thinking about it ahead of time. And there's an amazing number of women. There's actually more women than men. Wow. I don't know if men think that they got it figured and women are more worried. Okay.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say.
I'm not sure, but women are you know, it's a slight advantage to in favor of women.
Right.
But, you know, people get it. You know, and we talk about, you know, everything from kind of the financial planning aspects, no nest egg retirement plan, to what I call the non-traditional approaches, as well as the, you know, kind of the emotional things that I mentioned, like, you know, talking to your spouse or your kids or you know, your significant, your others, you know, partners, whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, and so I think that's the value. The other thing that I wanted to mention is that, you know, the original vision was to kind of create a course. You know, you've seen the material is 4.5 hours long. But you know, I think that the model of launching courses and charging people $1,000 or $2,000 for a course, I think that wasn't what I wanted. So what we've created is a community.
Yeah.
So it's a community where you pay a monthly fee. You use it as long as it's good to you, you know, good for you. And we keep adding content to it. And then, you know, if you decide to exit, you can exit. And, you know, I know from, you know, being overseas and not having access to kind of specialized area of interest, you know, I participate probably in a half a dozen forums, and you know, I love them. And, you know, you get notifications, like, you remember the old Borderless forum?
Yeah.
You get notifications when somebody updates a topic, and, you know, I have places, particularly with regard to e-commerce, where if I have a question, that's a go-to place for me to find information.
Yeah.
You know. And you know, it's invaluable.
Yeah.
You know, and it, you know, So you know, to me, that's the right model. And you and then you start to network. And you know, you and I met, and you know, I thought Taylor Pearson would be a great guest for you. You had Taylor Pearson on the podcast.
Back that was a while ago, huh?
Yeah, I know. It was after the end of Jobs. You know.
Yeah. So I did want to talk about like some of the solutions and stuff, but sure. Before we do that, you know, so now that we've talked about all the things that have gone into, you know, the situation that a lot of that demographic are in, the one that you're talking to, sure. You know, you use the word, you know, the new economy or the phrase new economy a few times. What do you mean by the new economy? What are the aspects of the economy that we're living in now that have changed so dramatically that maybe people don't realize?
Well, you know, it you know, you can go back to when, you know, you can go back as far as 1974 when ERISA law changed the pension environment and corporate pensions disappeared. So defined benefits disappeared and defined contributions, which came about, you know, known as the 401ks, changed the way people save. You can do that. But you really can look at the 80s and 90s when globally corporations started to outsource work to offshore work to places where they could get work done more cheaply. And it only accelerated, and we all know people that lost their jobs, you know, in the late 90s or early 2000s when, you know, kind of lots of jobs went to India and other places. You know, India graduates 1 million engineers a year from university in India. So if you're competing against that, that's a high bar. And by the way, they'll work New York hours. So don't think that they're gonna be sleeping when you're working. Just the opposite. And you know, so what happened was that the ability to network with people because of technology, because of broadband technology, you know, allowed you know basically everybody on the planet with a smartphone to be able to, you know, apply for a job. And you know, you can go. There's a terrific book that was written end of last year by Thomas Friedman. He wrote the book called "The Earth Is Flat." The world is flat. The Earth is flat. And he wrote that in the early 2000s when he talked about how the whole world was flat. And he wrote a book called "Thank You for Being Late." And I would challenge you to go to Amazon and read the free part. And if you don't buy the book, you know, I don't know, I'll buy the book for you. But essentially the premise was that in 2007, a whole bunch of things happened. You know, the first thing that happened was iPhones, okay? And what happened with iPhones was, you know, now we had something that, you know, had the internet, had, you know, the processing power that we'd never seen before and had communications capabilities that we'd never seen before. And suddenly the cloud appeared and you know, cloud computing technology, you know, Facebook came into relevance in 2007, 2008. You know, they opened up for the first time away from universities. And there were a number of other developments. And so technology has only accelerated since then. And it's accelerating at such a rapid pace. It's kind of like being in a car. You know, if you're accelerating in a car at a rapid pace, you're uncomfortable. Then suddenly, you know, you stop accelerating and you're there. You know, we're just continuing to accelerate, okay, in terms of the technology changes. It hasn't, you know, it hasn't slowed down. And we don't know when it will slow down.
You're right.
And so when I say the new economy, what I say is, look, you want to take advantage of, these trends and utilize them for your own benefit and be an early mover. Be educated. I'm not a tech person by any stretch of the imagination. You know, I'm a corporate executive. I have a skill set and strategy. I've run and built and run wealth management and asset management businesses on four different continents. So I am comfortable, you know, kind of in different parts of the world. But I'm not a tech guy by any stretch of the imagination. But, you know, when you can employ, you know, very, very good, intelligent, responsible labor cheaply in other places as an entrepreneur or as someone that, you know, can assemble a team and get more out of a team, you have an amazing ability to solve problems for people today and win business. You know, conversely, you can relocate from a high cost location in the United States to a low cost location, you know, like Medellin, you know, and save an enormous amount of money, and, you know, earn dollars and spend, you know, pesos, or spend, you know, whatever the local currency is.
Right.
So there's just the, you know, amazing number of opportunities out there today.
Right.
You know, I mentioned, you know, we ultimately got involved in physical goods e-commerce, which I think is a great, I think is the best model for most people if they're going to get involved in e-commerce. There are lots of different business models. I think physical goods are intuitive. You know, we originally got involved in that, you know, because we think we understand it. You know, you can do that, you know, kind of from any place on the planet.
Right.
So,
yes, I mean, basically what you're saying is, you know, that the technology is, worked against a lot of people, you know, in some ways as far as their career goes. But you're saying you can utilize that, use that technology to, you know, just kind of pivot and do in your career and, you know, benefit from that.
And it's, yeah. So in the course and in my sales page and my writing, I transitioned from the victim to the victor. Okay.
Right.
And that was it. I was walking around thinking I was going to earn, you know, lots of money for the rest of my life. Oh, woe is me, living just off Park Avenue in New York, right? You know, six-figure executive. And you know what? You know, I had to pick myself up one day and, you know, and say, hey, you know, how, you know, what am I going to be a victim? No, I'm not going to be a victim. You know,
right.
I'm going to end up solving for this. You know, I working inside a big corporation, you know, you can see this going on. OK, so it shouldn't be, you know, that you need some kind of a memo to understand how companies are squeezing costs out of the cost structure. Right. And how people, companies are offshoring and outsourcing business that they don't want. Alternative work arrangements are just one, you know, form of that. That works great for a lot of people, as well as works great for the corporation. So taking advantage of the new economy is, you know, that's the whole drumbeat, to be honest.
Right. Yeah. So now this is where we are, and you know, you've worked in finance for decades. You know, you're very knowledgeable about that kind of thing. I wanted to talk about maybe some asset classes specifically, and like how they've changed or how you see them at this point in time. Because, you know, I've talked about all kinds of different things. I talk about, different kinds of online income. I talk about real estate. I talk about this and that. And, you know, they're all different asset classes. And obviously there's different, you know, you can break those down even farther. But maybe we can talk about in general how you see different asset classes. So
sure.
We talked before about the so-called like traditional investments, meaning stocks, bonds, and this type of stuff. What do you think about that? You know, a lot of people are still in like annuities and things like that. Do you think that that's, you know, still like the a good place to be putting your money, or you know?
Okay, let me just kind of set the table for you. Okay, so I'm lucky in my day job. You know, I run wealth and asset management businesses. And this is the fifth wealth management platform I've built now on four continents. So I'm lucky. I get to see, you know, all of the very best asset managers with all of the very best strategies. They come through my office and pitch us. They want us to sell their stuff. And I get to see these people. So I have a great, you know, great advantage. And I've been doing this for a long time. I mean, I read prospectuses like, you know, some people read the daily paper. I mean, I get a lot of prospectuses and I love it. I'm a deal junkie. I would only tell you that the returns are going to be going forward compressed. All right. So they're not going to be as high as they have been in the past. It was March 6th of 2009 that the Standard & Poor's 500 put in a bottom. So we are now, you know, you know, over 9 years into a bull market. Okay. By all historical measures, you know, we're within a year of being, you know, kind of the longest ever expansion. Right. Now, with the tax cuts, there are lots of reasons to feel positive that this will continue. The old adage is that bull markets don't die of old age. They die for some other reason. So this could continue. But I do believe that returns are going to be compressed going forward. I think the new economy compresses returns for some people, and I think it leverages returns for other people. You know, the days when a guy like you could control, you know, numerous pieces of real estate with small amounts of money and make money through Airbnb, you know, that didn't exist, you know, 5 years ago, right? And so there are some massive opportunities, and then there are some ones that are less interesting. So, you know, you mentioned annuities. So kind of the prepackaged stuff that Wall Street puts together, I'm really not very bullish on. I mean, it's very fee-laden, okay?
Right.
All you have to do is go through the prospectuses and you see the conflicts of interest. Mm-hmm. In the public markets for equity, you know, market returns are probably going to be lower going forward. And I think, you know, essentially you have a trade-off right now where liquid securities are going to have relatively lower return profiles going forward, and illiquid strategies are going to be a place where you have higher rates of return going forward. So there are still illiquid strategies that I think are attractive, things like private real estate and private credit. I think there's some very good strategies in that. But, you know, these are strategies with, you know, returns in the mid-single digits to low double digits and not without a lot of risk, particularly on the private stuff, right? You can look at, you know, owning e-commerce sites where you can earn, you know, 3% a month if you can continue to, you know, operate, you know, websites that someone else has built. You can buy them with 3-4%, you know, monthly returns. You know, and in my view, e-commerce, which is now something like 7.5-9% of total retail sales and growing at 15%, it's only going to grow from here. So I, right. You know, I'm very bullish, very, very bullish on the e-commerce piece.
Right. Okay, so that's, you know, just your normal kind of equities and stuff like that. What about commodities? Would you normally, like, what I mean is like physical stuff, like would you say you know, there's been a lot of, I remember in 2000, and, you know, after the crisis, there's a lot of people that, you know, were saying gold, silver, all these types of precious metals, and also other types of commodities are going to go up. The precious metals crashed in like 2011. You know, but all those types, what do you think about the commodity markets? Kind of, is that something that people should be considering, or is that too,
you know? Yeah, I mean, look, you know, commodities as a, so for a wealthy family, you know, we deal with very wealthy families. You know, commodities for a very wealthy family is never going to constitute more than 10% of their asset allocation. So I can't tell you I spend a huge amount of time thinking about commodities. Mm. To be honest with you. Right. And, you know, generally what we do is find managers that really look hard at that, you know. So, you know, particularly, you know, right now there's a lot of talk about, you know, kind of alternative energy and the commodities that are required, you know, for battery technologies and things like that. So, you know, there's issues around that. You know, with regards to gold and silver, you know, I've owned gold as a hedge against Armageddon. Right. You know, unfortunately, you know, I don't own enough gold that if there was Armageddon, I would be okay. But if something goes really crazy, gold does really well. You know, I'm not never been somebody that could do an analysis around gold.
Yeah.
You know, so I kind of stay away from picking the commodities. What I do is, you know, I like managers that look at the opportunities that the individual companies have, and then I put money with those managers. Right. And so, You know, and so that's the way that I play the commodity cycle.
Okay. Yeah, no, I'm just kind of like, you know, from asking from a, you know, just your standard, you know, person that you know,
yeah,
that you talk to, you know, like not you know, extremely wealthy families or anything, but an individual who finds himself in the situation that you're talking about, maybe has it. So, yeah, I mean, it doesn't sound like you don't think commodities or these traditional investments should really be a large part of somebody's portfolio. Well, what about
not really.
Yeah, you I know that you've had a lot of rental real estate and you know a lot about that. What do you think about that as for just kind of your average person? Do you think that that's something should be getting into?
Yeah, look, I mean, at one point I owned 50 rental properties and I felt like they owned me. I didn't own them.
Yeah.
So, you know, I never got to the point where I could figure the scale thing out, you know. But I think if you can buy and particularly buy and improve, residential rental real estate in good markets, I mean, that's, you know, kind of the gold standard. Mm-hmm. I think you could say that, you know, warehouse properties, particularly you know, ones that are suited for e-commerce, would be, you know, something in demand. And you would say that malls and traditional retail would be, you know, something you'd want to stay away from,
right?
In terms of real estate. There are, you know, when you look at things globally, there is a way to diversify globally, and you know, if you're smart enough to be able to do that, that's great. Problem there is getting scale, and you know, not having to manage it yourself. That's, you know, that's kind of the issue.
Right.
The people that are contacting me mostly have own real estate, and they've, you know, the easy money's been made. You know, look, you know, there was a lot of money that was made back, you know, when the banks were bailing out of bad loans and where people were being forced to sell because they had, you know, loaded up on too much real estate. So I think the easy money's been made, to be honest. Mm. Real estate is something that, you know, I'm kind of building a war chest for the next cycle. You know, right. I'm not putting money to work today, but I am thinking that I'd like to load up on that. The next time there's a cycle, when that cycle will be, I don't know. And I'm not a doomsday guy. But you know, as I said, you know, we're kind of long in the tooth in terms of the traditional numbers around our economic recoveries. Don't know what'll happen. Things, you know, feel fine to me right now. The economy's growing. A consumer feels great. Read an article the other day that people really aren't spending their tax savings, their tax cut, and that's actually, I think, quite a positive. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's a good thing. But doesn't feel like this current, you know, growth in the economy is going to end. This is March of 2000, almost April of 2018. It doesn't feel like to me this is going to end real quickly. So it looks to me like it can keep going for a while. As long as the economy continues to be good, consumer spending should hold up fine, and we should have a decent market for, you know, kind of, you know, all of the traditional investments.
Yeah. Okay. And so you mentioned e-commerce. You said that you like e-commerce. Maybe we can talk a little bit more about that. Maybe people don't understand exactly what, you know, what that entails, or, you know, what that means. And I'm surprised a lot of people don't, when I mention e-commerce, they don't really know what that is. But it's, I mean, a huge thing. I'm reading this book. This one right here. 6 billion shoppers. And it was like...
Oh, really? I got to get that one.
Yeah, it's by the... it was the vice president of Alibaba, and he's talking about e-commerce and how it's expanding into a lot of new things. So, I mean, this is a huge thing going on, and so you're encouraging people to learn about it, try to get involved in it somehow. For someone that, you know, has no idea to wrap their head around, like, how in the world would I get involved in that? Like, what do you mean by e-commerce? What's going on there, and how can somebody even get started?
All right. Let me step back, if I can, just one step back before I answer your question. You know, kind of what we talk about in the No Nest Egg Retirement Plan is figuring out how to develop, you know, another source of income. And for most people, that typically starts with consulting, coaching, or freelancing. you know, leveraging some skill that they have in their profession, you know, in their, you know, that is innate to them, leveraging that and in, you know, the new economy and doing it over Skype or doing it online or doing it some way, but diversifying away from the paycheck, if you will, because none of us can control kind of what, you know, the corporation's going to do. So that's the first thing. Now, you know, when I started to kind of look at the investment piece of the new economy, what's going on is that there are websites that are generating income, and there is a market for these websites, and they're being bought and sold. And this is an emerging asset class where the information is very difficult to get your hands on. It's certainly not exchange traded or it's not like there's an efficient market. There's no institutional money. So that means that it's, you know, relatively undiscovered. And so if you are someone that can actually do the analysis, it reminds me of the early 80s when you could do that in the public equity market. And so, you know, you have an enormous opportunity now to invest in established websites that generate income and, you know, take advantage of the new economy at unprecedented multiples. Let me give you an example. Right now, if you were to purchase a smallish physical goods e-commerce site, it might trade at 30 times monthly profit. So 30 times monthly profit. You know, you put that in, you know, relative to the Standard & Poor's 500, it trades at 18 or 19 or 20 times annual profit. Now, there's a big difference between, you know, kind of the Standard & Poor's 500 and, you know, smallish e-commerce sites. But if you were looking at an e-commerce site relative to a private business, you know, a Subway franchise or some kind of a franchise, would you really want to plunk down a couple of $100,000 for a physical franchise in some city, which, you know, may only be good as long as the demographics in that place are good, with a whole management structure on top of you at the franchisor level? Or would you rather have more control and have, you know, better going in yields and much lower risk, you know, kind of from the amount of money you put up on an e-commerce site? The approach I took, James, was, I have been 150% convicted that I was totally right on things and lost all my money. So I took what, you know, I call the venture capital approach, which is take a small amount of money and make a bet on something and, you know, see how it plays out and, you get educated and then do that many times. And most venture capital or private equity funds will do okay on 10 investments. They'll do okay on 6 or 7. They'll lose all their money on one. And one or two of them will create the returns for the entire fund. All right. And that was the approach I took. I, you know, had, you know, an amount of money, and I was literally, you know, willing to go ahead and, you know, put, you know, a bunch of money out there and see if I could, you know, make it work. And I knew that I wouldn't do so well on a whole bunch of things. We got quite lucky. The second website we bought is in a very large niche. You know, we knew if we could get our fair share of the sales in this niche that we'd do quite well. We struggled all. We bought it in November of 2015. November of 2015. In 2016, we struggled. We read about all of these people that, you know, in their e-commerce businesses, they were crushing it and they were living the dream and they were in Thailand and we were, you know, killing ourselves trying to figure out what to do. And then literally a year ago in March, things took off for us. And last year, our business was up 5x in revenues and it hasn't stopped. And so we now have scaled a large team. We have about 10 people that work for us. And they're located everywhere from the Philippines with customer service to Bangladesh where we and Pakistan where we have developers. We've got a kind of a COO type who is in India. You know, we live in the Middle East. We have a person in Ireland. We have somebody in Mexico that does paid traffic for us. And everybody works virtually. Everybody is networked together using software. There are software tools that we use. So there's project software called Asana. There's chat software called Slack. We don't let people communicate through any other means. We sell on a platform called House, which is like Amazon for household goods. It's been eye-opening for us. It's been life-changing, to be honest with you. It's been entirely life-changing. So that business, our e-commerce business last year generated, you know, close to $2.5 million in revenue, you know, up from, you know, as I say, you know, 5x what it was the year prior. And, you know, I was literally in November of 2016. I was reading a prospectus like I do, you know, almost every day. And I saw a site that was in our exact same niche, and they were selling on this platform House. And they were half of our size, and they were generating 50% more profitability than we were. And I said, oh my Lord, you know, we actually had an account at House. And we shifted all of our direction, and you know, things just exploded at the beginning of last year, literally 1 year ago today. Wow. So
that's great. I mean, that was a learning curve for you. I mean, it's not like this is something you
it was horrible.
Experienced.
We made every mistake that you can possibly make. Okay, right. My wife is an operations guru. She's really, really good at operations. Mm-hmm. This is her job. I have a day job. She comes in and she does it. She used to be kind of the COO of a private equity group for a Wall Street investment bank. And, you know, she's very, very orderly and organized. And you know, we would get together after work and we couldn't figure out why we couldn't solve, and make money when everyone else seemed to be, you know, living the dream. And, you know, and we weren't living the dream, Jay. Mm. We were not doing it.
Yeah.
So we figured out every way you can to screw up, you know.
Right. But you figured it out. That's great. And I know that, you know, what you did and what you recommend people, because there's another, you know, way that you can go about with e-commerce. You can try to start your own e-commerce website.
Yes.
But you usually recommend that people, you know, buy them. Would you recommend that to everybody, or what's the reason that you recommend that?
It's a very easy equation. There's two very easy equations. You know, 90% of the businesses fail in the first 5 years. That's, you know, true for e-commerce or physical businesses, number one. Number two, the question is, do you have more time or money? So in our case, you know, we had more money than time. You know, I turned 60, you know, and so, you know, I needed something to work for me. I wanted to look for something that was bite-sized. The site that I'm talking about, we paid $25,000 for. We often earn that in a month now. So it turned out okay. You know, but I'm not telling you about the six or seven that, you know, didn't turn out well at all. Okay, one that lost all our money—that was $25,000. Okay, yeah. So, but we were prepared for that. It was part of the, you know, kind of the mentality that went into this, where, you know, I have, you know, been a lifelong investor in the equity markets and been entirely convicted and incredibly wrong before. So, you know, risk management's a big thing. But that was the philosophy. Was to buy producing websites that had already proven that there's an audience. They had proved they've got good suppliers. The margins are good. And this resonates really well with people in their 40s and people in their 50s. You know, they're not going to sit around and invent the next great gadget. You know? They want to see something that's already proven itself. And, you know, so that resonates really well. I'm working with a fellow that joined the email list last October. I prompted people in December to join a course that I recommend, because I think you have to get the foundational understanding on what drives value in e-commerce sites. And I had a conversation with him, and I'm 11 hours ahead of him. And he wrote me an email as I was asleep saying, look, I just don't think I have the time. This was like an hour after I went to bed. I don't think I have the time, but it was great talking to you. An hour and a half later, he said, I bought the course. Okay. This was in December. I woke up in the morning. I read the first email, then I read the second email. He bought a site, paid $12,000 in the end of January, made or lost a little bit of money in February, and just had a monster month in March. You know, everyone knows it was lucky. Okay, he got very lucky. But, he couldn't be more happy that he's in the game and he's trying and he's learning. And, he said to me, he's the guy that owns a bunch of real estate. And he says, this is his future. I mean, he sees this ability to, fall asleep at night and have people send in orders as being, kind of really cool,
Yeah.
Which I can tell you it is.
Okay. Right, right. Well, I mean, I think.
I wake up in the morning, and I look over at my iPad and I look at the dashboard for our e-commerce site, and I see, we sold $12,000 or $15,000 worth of stuff, while the team in the Philippines was working. And I wake up in the morning and I see our Dropbox being adjusted by the guy in India because he's an hour and a half or 2 hours ahead of us, it's wonderful. I can only tell you, it's great.
Yeah, sure. And I don't think that anybody can argue that, against things going this way. I mean, everybody, even I don't know if some people might think that it's kind of saturated, the e-commerce, but it's, I mean, there are, it's tons, I mean, I think millions of people coming on the internet every year, And
yeah.
This is really expanding, as we can see with like Amazon's growth and stuff like that. I mean, there's different types of those stores in different countries that are all booming. A lot of people are just becoming accustomed to buying and using buying stuff online or using these apps or the different online shopping platforms and things like that. So yeah. I think that it's something.
So mm-hmm. I just wrote a piece for the blog called My Wife's $2 million IKEA Desk, which is the desk behind me here. All right. And physical goods e-commerce is about physical goods commerce in the United States is about a $5 trillion market. It's about 7.5 to 9% e-commerce, and it's growing at 15 to 20% a year. And to your point, I don't know anyone who's going back and going to stores more often as opposed to using their phone more often.
Right.
We own a site that sells baby stuff, okay? Mm. Right? And 65% of the orders are women between the ages of 25 and 34 ordering off their iPhones and their Android phones. They're going to places like Target, which, is a wonderful store, but oftentimes you get there and you shop for something and it's a mess, okay? They know what they want, then they walk out of the store and they order from us because they can get the entire collection with, free shipping, go figure.
Yeah.
Don't have to carry it at home and don't have to hunt around a bunch of disorder. So
right. Yeah. So, and I think that there's, you mentioned some of the other benefits. I mean, it's very easy for that type of business. It's very easy to, outsource and have people that are not necessarily working for you that can help you. Even if you're not tech savvy like yourself, they can help you optimize your website. They can help you with, advertise marketing, online marketing, social media marketing, or whatever that you want to do. I think there are also some tax planning advantages. And also just being able to strategically, set up the jurisdictions where you operate, things like that, that, it's just not available for brick and mortar type of businesses.
Yeah. So the first point you made was huge because the biggest fear I had was the tech fear. I mean, being in my late 50s, could I do this? I mean, who am I, right? I mean, I could hardly, operate my office PC, and I've got a squadron of people to help me, right? How could we do this? Well, to your point, there are platforms like BigCommerce and Shopify that take care of all of this stuff. It's amazing, okay? And there are people on Upwork and that you can get a hold of at a moment's notice. And you know, once you build a Rolodex of these people, you're good to go. But yeah, I mean, the opportunity to do tax planning, you know, first of all, live overseas. This year, I think the number for 2018 is $104,100 that you can exclude from your earnings. So if you have a spouse, you own it jointly, you each get $104,000. If you can't live on that, I mean, each $104,000 you don't pay taxes on.
And then,
I mean,
and then your housing deduction. And
you have a housing deduction on top of that.
Yeah.
And now the other thing that, you know, we talk about in the nest egg retirement plan is that the biggest expense that most people have is their housing expense, right? So, you know, New York City, where I lived, in numbeo.com, I have open on tab on my browser every day. I look at it every day. I'm kind of a maniac. The benchmark for 100 is New York City, right? And the number for New York City currently is $7,500 a month to live there. You can argue if you'd spend more or less, but that's the number. And they compare that to other cities, right? Well, I used to live in Miami. And, you know, then you can save money. And in Miami, you can live on $5,600, okay, as opposed to $7,500. So you could save money if you left New York and moved it to Miami. The number for Lisbon, Portugal is $2,600. Now, this is not Mexico. This is not a developing country, okay? Right. And I love Mexico, don't get me wrong, okay? But this is Western Europe,
right?
And it's half of Miami,
right,
a third of New York. So if you are running a business that doesn't require you to put a key in the lock, you know, like you said, in a co-working station in Medellin, Colombia,
right,
you know, it's an enormous advantage. Okay. I have a kid in college who, you know, I think when she's done, she'll probably travel internationally. And I have two young kids that are in elementary and secondary, middle school here. And, you know, the ability to grow, have them grow up overseas and the, you know, the cultural aspects of it, you know, it's wonderful. It's really terrific. So, but I know the board of this crowd doesn't need to be convinced of that.
Right. So. But, you know, let's do talk about that because we haven't talked about that yet. another part of the strategy you talk to people about is, you know, lowering their expenses by, you know, considering moving to inexpensive places or things like that. So I think one of the tabs here, you've got live abroad, you know, living abroad, resource guide. So, you know, you've lived all over the world. What do you see now as maybe some places that, you know, people might want to consider?
I can give you a somewhat dated view of some places. I've done business since the early 80s in North and South America. So I spend an enormous amount of time in all of the cities in South and Central America, okay? And I love those places. My wife is Brazilian, so, you know, I know Brazil, I know Argentina, I know Chile, I know Colombia, I know Mexico. I've been to Ecuador. I was there during the crisis back in the day in the early 2000s. You know, I love that part of the world, a culturally great place to live. The difference between what's going on in Central and South America and what's going on in Asia, where I spend more time now, is that the demographic growth in Asia, the family formation in Asia, the adoption of technology, the way the economies are run, they're just sprinting way ahead. Okay, it's just amazing what's going on in Asia. And if you haven't been to Kuala Lumpur, if you haven't been to Bangkok, if you haven't been to Ho Chi Minh City or China or Hong Kong, you know, you really need to go. It's just an eye opener. And so, or the Middle East, the demographics kind of bail out everything. You know, we talk about the e-commerce. If you're an investor in the equity market, or any market, if you get the big trend right, you know, you're generally going to make money, right? And, you know, e-commerce is the big trend. Get that right. You know, from a demographic standpoint, and I have a friend that's, you know, he's buying expat-oriented real estate and renting it out in Cambodia, you know.
Right.
And Cambodia is now the place where China is outsourcing to. So, you know, he's in front of that trend. There's just a lot going on, and it's amazingly inexpensive. I live in the Middle East in the GCC here, and you know, everyone comes from another country. You know, 7 out of 8 or 7.5 out of 8, you know, 6.5 out of 8 workers here are expats. They're not locals, right? And everyone comes here for the opportunity, and they can earn between 1.5 or 1.25, 1.5 times to 10 times what they could earn back home. You know, so no one wants to go back home. Wow. Okay. No one wants to go to the country of their passport. They're literally, people are supporting families of 5, 10, 20 people with their earnings here. You know, whether they're from Nepal or Bangladesh or Pakistan or the Philippines. Okay. It's amazing. And so, you know, you have this and then that wealth, multiplies when it gets in country. So you have, you know, everybody connected. I have a personal trainer from Sri Lanka. Mm-hmm. You know, when I go to the gym, he's on Wi-Fi talking to his wife and his daughter in Sri Lanka. Mm-hmm. Okay. You know, I mean, back in the old days, you'd go into a telephone booth and drop a quarter in and, you know, once a month or something like that. Right. You know, but that's how, you know, networked the whole world is. And, my view of the world is that I think that there's kind of a bigger profile in Asia and, a wonderful lifestyle that I'm incredibly comfortable with in Central and South America. So where we will end up, I don't know. To be honest with you, people ask me, I can tell you this, I won't be going back to New York City.
Yeah. Yeah. It sounds like Portugal you're considering too, or what do you think about Europe right now?
I like Portugal because I think you get Portugal at kind of a 25% discount to the rest of Europe. To be honest with you, always have had a kind of an affinity to live in the UK, but the UK is still relatively expensive. All the indications are that they're surviving Brexit just fine. Have friends living in Ireland who are and having the time of their life. They love living in Ireland. Know some people living in different Central European countries. Probably have less of an affinity for the colder places. I'm a warm weather guy, so I look for the warm weather. My sister-in-law and brother-in-law and their family live in Istanbul. He's Turkish. So we visit them a lot. I love that city. Probably won't end up there, but love visiting there.
Yeah.
My wife being Brazilian, my wife and kids speak Portuguese, so we have an obvious affinity for Portugal, right?
Yeah. Okay. Well, great. Yeah, I mean, we've run across a lot of things. I mean, basically, you know, the economy has changed. A lot of people, you know, this is what I talk to them in person. They email me. A lot of people in this specific situation where, you know, they no nest egg retirement. I mean, that is it. I mean, it says it perfectly. You know, a lot of people,
unless you've got a pile of cash, you got no nest egg. Yeah.
No nest egg, and certainly not that's going to sustain you passively. Especially if you have a family and things like that. I mean, it's just it's expensive, and so you help people do that by getting into these new markets, kind of rethinking the traditional finance model, also, you know, lowering your budget by going to, you know, less expensive places and all kinds of other things. And you talk about different asset classes and what might be good and what might not be. So you have the no nest egg retirement plan. And I believe we've got a discounted thing for the podcast today, right?
Yeah. So the community, which is a very vibrant group of people that are discussing all these issues and are at different points in their journey. So it's great. So you hear people that, have already, kind of accomplished something that you're seeking to accomplish. And you have newbies coming in that are trying to learn what you already know. But in addition to the community, you've got 4.5 hours of coursework what I call alternative retirement planning, because the stuff that is being sold is, you know, these fancy programs that are spit out on gorgeous presentations are useless, I think, to be honest with you. But this is normally $27 a month. And for the borderless community, we're going to give everybody a 1 month trial for a dollar. Use borderless as the coupon. And if you have a problem, just, you know, sign up and I'll send you back the money or send me an email at info@myretirementrehab.me. But we'd love to have some of the folks from the borderless community. I remember the old borderless community back when you hosted it. It was a great group of people, very like-minded. I know the demographic of the podcast. You've shared that many times. I think it fits really well with what we're doing, and excited to have more people join our community.
Good. Yeah. So, I mean, please, people, go, you know, I'd like for you to support Ian Bond. I mean, he's definitely knowledgeable about this kind of thing. I know there's a lot of people that are in a situation. So, you know, I think you can afford a dollar a month, but at least give it a try. And yeah, you can go over there, just use that, the borderless code. And so, yeah, that's great. And really, you know, let me know how that works out for you. You know, we'll all try to figure this out going forward. We're all in kind of new territory, and we are, you know, learning how to survive and thrive in today's economy. So that's what we're doing.
Let me just mention one other thing, which is in the next couple of weeks, we'll be launching an informational, you know, little bit less than 1 hour webinar. Mm. And so, that, you know, I'll give you the heads up when that webinar is launched, and we can you know, have people come and listen to a more formal pitch than the conversation that we've had here. But I think that we've covered all of the bases, to be honest with you.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, great. Thanks a lot, Ian Bond, and good luck with your thing. We'll definitely be in touch.
James, always a pleasure, and good luck there in Medellin. It's one of my favorite cities. So yeah. Enjoy yourself, man.
Oh, I am.
Really, really great talking.
Great. All
right, man.
Thanks for joining us for the Borderless Podcast, traveling, investing, and living beyond borders.